It's great to be here. I love to see all the people from Alaska. Of all the meetings I go to, there are not many people who I feel more at home with than people from Alaska. First of all, I want to say I'm going to speak from my own experience, and it may be different from yours. And that's why I'm just going to speak from my own experience. I'm going to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I want to say that I am a compulsive eater, a hope to die compulsive overeater. I'm a compulsive overeater of the hopeless variety. That's what I'll say. And I am of the binge eating and restricting variety of compulsive overeater. When I first came into Overeaters Anonymous, I weighed over 200 pounds, and that I came in 1984, in March of 1984. I had arrived back from a foreign country, and my mother had thrown me out of her apartment, and I was living in a terrible group house sort of situation in downtown San Diego, in Hillcrest. It's a nice area, terrible house, and I immediately fell in love with a drug addict. And I knew nobody in San Diego. So I just want to tell you that I was in the biggest pile of manure that God could have created for me. And fortunately, it was exactly what I needed. So just to briefly go over what it was like, I believe I was born a compulsive eater. I came from a family of five children. My dad was a compulsive eater, alcoholic, so was my mom. And my mom was also a lovely raging Al-Anon. My sister became an alcoholic. My little brother and I became compulsive overeaters. And my two older ones, I don't know. I haven't seen any odd behaviors other than my oldest brother may be a workaholic. So it was and I want to make it clear that I don't believe that my father's alcoholism or the trouble of my family caused my compulsive eating. I think it was my little spark of life. It was all me and what I was given, what I was born with. From a very early time, I was different than my siblings. I knew where everything was in the cabinet, and I remember standing on my tiptoes, I must have been three, and wolfing down some vitamin C pills in the very top cabinet. My mother knew that I knew where everything in the house was, so she would ask me, if she lost something or some item she couldn't find, she would ask, and sure enough, I would know. She had to hide food from me. My brothers always had these really good candy bars when I got older, because they were wrestlers, and my mother bought them for them. I would steal those. I would steal their Christmas candy. I would take any candy I could get. And I was the kid who had to be stopped from winning all the pancake eating contests in my house, because my father thought my brother's egos were easily damaged and they needed to win some. So when I got a little bit older, I remember one of my happiest memories being alone after school, no one in the house, into the basement with the lights out, a terrible TV on, and eating some of those purloined candy bars and drinking milk and thinking, I'm alone. And to this day, when I think about that feeling of avoiding everything in life and just being one with that TV set and that food, I still salivate a little bit, because it was so satisfying, that feeling. So fast forward, I did not look like a compulsive overeater as a child. I just was. And I knew that there was something different about me than my fellows. I was not I was not a particularly overweight kid. I don't think I was overweight at all. I was not, but I was not overweight. I was a swimmer. And when I got into middle school, the girls and I started to care about what we looked like. And I hung out with this ratty group of girls, and we would, stand side by side and compare our waistlines and, compare ourselves to each other. So that's when I started to diet, because I was like, I was much more muscular than these girls. And I was 10 pounds heavier than they were. And I really thought that was shocking. So as soon as I started dieting, something weird happened. I started to binge eat. You know, I didn't just overeat. I was binge eating. And then I thought, I better get serious about this dieting. And I joined Weight Watchers. As soon as that happened, the binges just took off. I mean, and I could binge on anything. When it talks about us having a physical problem, you know, physical illness, is that when I overeat, something odd happens. Instead of feeling full, I feel like I want more. So that's that, you know, that physical illness in my body. It's not towards a particular food, because I frankly have binged on mustard. I've binged on cabbage. My thing is, I just want all of it. You know, the thought of a half a cup of ice cream, it's like, really? Waste it. I mean, I want a bowl of ice cream. And so I started to eat large quantities of food, and very strangely. So I remember sitting down and eating a can of green beans, you know, out of the can, the whole can. I, you know, did the whole little brownie into the never make it into the pan sort of thing. I ate dough. I ate anything. And the diet worked for a while. I lost weight until it didn't work anymore. There was just no way that it could. I mean, I was a compulsive eater of the hopeless variety. Nothing was going to work, but it didn't stop me from trying. And I was very persistent in my trying, because one of the central characteristics about me is that I am sometimes wrong, but rarely do I doubt myself. I was always sure I was right and sure I could do something. So that willfulness, that selfishness, that's how we define selfishness, is wanting things my way, wanting it to go according to my script, was a pretty key element in my personality, and still is, as you could tell. But I really wanted things to go my way. So I tried every diet there was. I tried crazy diets. And, you know, I was swimming this whole time. My mom had me swimming every day. She always had me in some activity, because she knew that I would be intolerable if I was not totally worn out. So fast forward, my father's alcoholism got really bad. And as I say, I don't think it caused me to be a compulsive eater, but it impacted it. And when I was in high school, I gained an enormous amount of weight in a very short amount of time, maybe 3 weeks, 40 pounds, something like that. And my mother had taken me some sort of behavioral modification program. And they taught us how, you know, how to eat correctly. And one of the things she said is, oh, it's okay for you to eat anything you want, as long as you pack it into a suitcase, put it under your bed, you can have any food you want. And then say you have to have all your Tupperwares of what you're going to eat ready for you. It was called a food vacation. Well, those food vacations I thought were brilliant. And my food vacations became every day. I remember going to 7-Eleven, getting large bags of food, driving to a parking lot for high school. I was in a 68 Chevrolet station wagon, and leaning down in the seat, reading a Cosmopolitan magazine and eating until the end of the school day. So I missed a lot of school. I was a very good student. So I still graduated very high in my class, but I missed a lot of school. Like, they should have thrown me out. So that last year of high school. But I had gained so much weight that the clothes, I don't know if you remember this, but there's a certain point you can still get that button in the buttonhole. But I gained so much weight where there was not even a chance of that button going in that buttonhole. That meant I had no clothes, because I was a kid. I was powerless. I was resourceless. So this was a really horrible thing for me to not have clothes. Somehow I managed to get clothes and you know, wear the elastic waistbands, and I graduated from high school. And I want you to know that in my whole time in high school, even though I had a 68 Chevrolet station wagon with 7 seats in it, I never gave anyone a ride home. Do you know why? There were too many candy wrappers stuffed under the seats to give anybody a ride home. I couldn't do it. And there was no way I could all the candy wrappers out of my car. And the smell of chocolate was so prevalent everywhere around me. So I spent all my money before I went to college, medical weight loss program that my parents know nothing about. I walked to it every day. and got weighed and measured. And I lost some weight, maybe, I don't know, 30 pounds. And I went to school and I had all these new clothes. And, you know, I lived in Seattle and I went to school in Ohio. And within probably 2 months, I had started eating again, because there's no stopping a compulsive eater. There's no magic bullet here. I had all these pretty clothes, and then I had no clothes again. So my solution was to go to the Salvation Army, and I got those sailor pants and those army work pants. And it was lucky that I went to a very liberal kind of hippie groovy kind of school, because you could wear anything and be accepted. So my uniform in school was work shirts and army pants. And I wandered around under a raincoat with chocolate in my fingernails, you know, as chocolate. I would walk into a room and people would say things like, "Oh, somebody's been drinking hot chocolate." Anyway, so it was pretty terrible. I learned how to smoke, and I used a little bit of drugs in college, you know, marijuana, and it saved my life because I didn't kill myself. And that was always my plan, was to. And I went to a foreign country after I graduated, I got a fellowship. And I lived in this Asian country for 3 years. And I weighed the same amount as when I went into college. So this is why the weight thing doesn't really make sense in my story, because when I went into college, I weighed a certain weight. Then I went all the way up to 200 pounds and I went back down to this other weight without dieting, but I had stopped binging. I had stopped dieting, so I had stopped binging. And I was smoking, who knows what else. But then I went to this foreign country and everything was fine until I got sick and I had to come home. It wasn't really fine. I would go into Bangkok once a month, and the secretaries would notice that every month I was 10 pounds up or 10 pounds down. And they'd say, "You know, you are really different. Maybe you have something, you know, I've heard of something called bulimia. Do you think you might have that?" And of course I knew everything. So I blew them off entirely. I got sick and they sent me home and I went to a doctor and put me on a special diet. And guess what happened? As soon as I started restricting my eating, I started. So it was so bad. At that point, I broke into somebody's house and I was eating sugar cubes out of a box in their house. That is really not normal behavior. And I really haven't ever heard anybody do that than me. So my mother came and got me, brought me home, and said by this time she had gone into AA, and my father left when I was 19 and we never saw him again. And we think he died of alcoholism. So I knew that alcoholism was deadly. And I knew that my mother and my little sister were in recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was working for them. So she dropped me off at an OA meeting and said, "I think you need this." And I really didn't like it at all. It took me a long time to like OA. And you know how people say, "Oh, I just feel like I'm at home." No, 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 no. I was of the come late, leave early variety and sit in the row of half measures at the back and thinking, you know, it's really nice you folks have this little God thing going and holding hands. Isn't that precious? And, but I don't want a thing to do with it. But again, you know, I was raised in Seattle and my mother had moved to San Diego. I knew nobody in San Diego. All I had was Overeaters Anonymous. My mother wouldn't talk to me anymore until I got a sponsor. I got a sponsor. I was fired twice, right in rapid succession. And I would have run rather than sponsor me at that point in my life, because I was a very difficult case. I believed that if I ate a certain food, like if I ate chicken, it would make me do this. If I ate this food, it would make me do this. I was into like really good nutrition, health food sort of thing. And food is your medicine. And so I had started limiting what I would eat, the kinds of food I would eat. So by the time I finally got into recovery, I was eating cabbage. That's what I was eating. And that's where restricting led me. I was a 200 pound cabbage eater. So finally met somebody who offered to be my sponsor. And the first thing she said to me was, "Kate, I'd like you to get a service job at your very next meeting you go to. And so I did. I became the coffee maker at the Northminster Presbyterian Church. And by that time, I had a car. It was a dumpy car. It was like a $500 Plymouth Valiant, you know, with no spare tire. But it had room in the trunk for the coffee maker. And so I became a coffee maker. And that was the most important thing I ever did, because it meant that I had to come early and leave late and run into people and talk with them. And there is nothing that compulsive overeaters want to talk about more than, you know, you really shouldn't have that on the table. And I'd like this kind of tea. And I'd like this non-sweetened hot chocolate. And the coffee should be this way. And so I really got to know a lot of people. And she also said, I'd like you to go in and introduce yourself at the beginning of each meeting. So I would go up to the front and, you know, but I wasn't wearing pants because I didn't want to admit my pant size. So I was just wearing muumuus around. And I would go up to the front of the room in a muumuu and say, I'm Kate, I'm a compulsive eater. And my sponsor told me I had to come up and say hello. And then I would go sit down. And I for a long time. And she gave me, she also said, now we're going to read out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as soon as I got the big book, I loved it. I began to really, I remember reading the third step prayer and saying, okay, I get this. And then I read right through to the first step, and I started doing little mini four steps all the time, little 10 steps. Nobody taught me. I just read it out of the book because I was angry all the time. You know, I had a drug addict boyfriend who would take my car, leave me in some park for 5 hours, you know, take my car to go score drugs and then come back and pick me up. And I knew nothing about his drug addiction. I thought he was a little pot smoking marijuana addict, and he was not. So I got it. Something happened to me. And because I was all alone, I got it that it was me. I had to make this decision. I couldn't, you can't rely on a sponsor. I couldn't rely on any one person. Oh, it had to be mine. And so I worked the steps. I did my inventories. And I worked with many different sponsors, some of whom have left OA, some of whom went back out, some of whom went to other programs. And again, it really confirmed my conviction that, yeah, I had to be in OA, and I had to, no matter who was here or who wasn't, I'm claiming my chair. And it was a wonderful time in my life. This drug addict that I was living with eventually, got into Narcotics Anonymous and became my husband. And we've been married over 30 years now. So it was all quite magical what had happened. And we were on fire with the 12 steps. And I got in with this group of people who were into service. And we started a recovery home for women with eating disorders in San Diego that lasted about 20 years. You know, I remember we slept outside to guard our goods. We were we held a yard sale, and that was going to be the opening money for the recovery home. And so we all slept overnight to make sure no beach bum came and took our goods. But it was a great time. And I've had a lot of challenges since that time. You know, I got to go back to graduate school, got to have real jobs. I got to have children. You know, I had to take in my sister's child. I was blessed to take in my sister's child for 2 years. Had to take care of my mother who was dying. And I went through a major depression, and I was out. I left my job and I was on the couch for 2 years. And at no time did I ever feel the need to eat compulsively, because the obsession had been removed. I was given the 10th step promise, which is that we will be safe and protected, and we will have neutrality with food. And that's what I was given. And I worked my little buns off all the time in service, because what was really good news, the good news is that service began to feel really good. And the kind of service that felt really good, almost as good to me as taking a hike. Hiking for me is like sublime. That's my thing. I love to hike. But so do I love to sponsor. I love to sponsor. And I love it. I love to see the light come on in somebody else's eyes, and they get transformed. It doesn't happen often, but when it happens, it's just so wonderful. And to know that I have been like a little channel for God's words has been great. So that's really changed my life. And I began sponsoring like I've sponsored a lot of women in my 35 years of abstinence, you know, Overeaters Anonymous. And it just gets better. I started to become more, it's kind of like I said this to the group of R1. Remember a river runs through it. The kid learns how to fly fish from his dad and he uses the same rhythm as his dad uses. And then one day he's got his own rhythm and he is like a king. Well, I feel like I came into my own with sponsorship because I don't have to sponsor the way I was sponsored. I have to sponsor the way the people I sponsor need me to sponsor. I have to figure that out. And so it's really intellectually challenging and emotionally challenging. And I love it. And so I feel like I've been really blessed by being at Overeaters Anonymous today. I just want to let you know, I got up at 8 o'clock and I sponsored somebody for an hour. And then I went to the meeting. And then my sister-in-law needs me to make a salad for dinner tonight. So I went out and got the ingredients. And then I came here and then I'm going to make that salad. And then I'm going to do the 2-hour workshop. And this is not an unusual day. And it's not like I have to do this. It's I want to do this. I feel so good doing it. And I'm just so blessed that whatever little dopamine receptor is being touched here, is being touched by this, you know, because there's a lot of horrible things that can affect my dopamine receptors. And this is a really good thing. And I feel really connected with it too. And so throughout the whole pandemic, I'm still connected with all these women I sponsor. I even sponsor men because we don't have a lot of men in OA in Montana. This little town, my Monday meeting has 4 people. Today we had like 10. So we're a small community and, you know, whoever needs us to sponsor, we're going to do it. Because they can't find another sponsor. So I think my time is up, but I just want to say that probably one of the blessings of my life has been coming into Overeaters Anonymous. And I feel like, you know, I'm uniquely qualified to help people as we all are uniquely qualified. I mean, I love being a mom. I love being a mom. There's a lot of moms in the world. There's not a lot of recovered compulsive overeaters in the world that can help other people. And so I feel like I got to find my little mission in life, you know, my niche. And I'm a lucky person for that. So thanks for letting me share.